Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
If.
Here's John Williams.
Now I better read this to make sure I get it right. Hi, it's 108. I'm John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Like me on Facebook, I'm King John there. And on Twitter, you can follow me at WGN King John. We do this show Saturdays too, you know. That is Saturdays from 10 a.m. until noon. This is kind of funny. I don't know why, but for some reason when Violetta popped in today, she said, if a tree falls in the woods and no one is there to hear it, does it make a sound? I said, did you read my tweet? She said, no, what are you talking about? I said, I just tweeted a version of that. She goes, you did not. I said, look it up. I tweeted moments ago, if a president tries to fire a special prosecutor in the woods and no one hears it, did he really obstruct justice? Today, 2:10. That was a promotional tweet by me. And somehow that was sort of in the...
in the universe.
In the universe. And while you said that's not your favorite saying, in fact, you don't even like that saying, it popped out of your mouth. What a weird thing.
Well, I don't like it because I can't understand or choose which way I fall.
Well, I don't think that's an either or. That just an is.
Yeah. I mean, the tree made a sound, but no one heard it, so who cares?
I guess it is an either or. Yeah, right. Well, so on Facebook, Violetta, you are still matching people's pictures that they are uploading to us to artwork that you find in museums around the world. I believe you've done about 45 of these or so now.
It feels like 150. Actually, 1,000.
But she doesn't mind, and that's the great thing.
No, it's a lot of fun. And everyone's being so fun and participating.
I know. And lots of props to you for doing such a good job on it. So I'm King John on Facebook, and you can post your picture there, and then Violetta will try and find a match. Elif is doing a lot of hard work on this, too. And,
I'm just kidding.
No, I don't know why I'm laughing.
I like it. Don't worry.
I'm laughing at some of the pictures that I'm seeing here. So pick out your favorite, V, and then let me know what that is of the most recent ones.
Right now, I kind of like Toni Forrester.
Which one is that?
She's the one, she's wearing a blue shirt, and then she's kind of, the artwork that I found is her lounging.
Yes, she's got dark hair, right?
Yes, dark hair.
Lovely lady.
Another fun one is, I actually don't have her name, but she's wearing the hat, and I think they have an uncanny, their eyes are both blue, and I think it looks like her. It looks like a painting of her.
We will talk about this net neutrality story. We will talk about net neutrality. We will talk about President Trump's desire to fire Robert Mueller and what that means after 2 o'clock. I said yesterday, and I still need someone to explain to me better, if the president said, I want to do it, but he doesn't do it, then did he really commit a crime? Did he really obstruct justice? How big of a deal is that? And I know this has really rocked the world. And I guess it gives better evidence that the president tried to or did obstruct justice. That's what this investigation has come down to.
Well, I don't know. I'll be interested to hear what your expert says about that. I don't know about the crime part of it. But it is a story of drama. It's a dramatic moment.
It is that.
You know, where the president in the White House says, fire this guy, and the chief attorney says, I will not. I'll quit if you make me do that. Yeah. And then he backs down.
Yeah.
That's a great story.
It is that. And what a scene. I mean, when they make the movie, that's going to be part of it, right? Where the attorney who must be honored to be special counsel or a counselor to the president says, I'll quit this job if you make me do that, sir.
It's going to have to be a 10-part miniseries.
Nobody stares down Donald Trump and wins, and Trump did. Probably in the back of his mind. You know, this is the defense I'm sure he'll use. I say stuff. I think out loud. I punch. These are air punches. And so I threw that one, and they say, no, don't do that. And then I say, yeah, right. That's crazy. I can't do that. I won't do it. There's no sin, crime, and coming up just spitballing ideas, they'll say. We'll talk about that a little later on. I mentioned to Steve before the news that research now says that you should not do this over the age of 53. Many of us do. Even if you're under 53, you don't want to see people over the age of 53 doing this. What is it? And by the way, I'm doing it now.
tweeting.
Research? What is this, science, or this is some...
Wearing blue jeans.
Oh. Are you wearing Obama dad jeans?
Well, I think that's what happens. Or else you try and hip it up too much, and they go, oh, stop it. You're 53 now. Honey, you're 57. Are you kidding me? That's ridiculous.
I just bought my dad the nicest pair of jeans. He had that whitewash thing going on, and I finally got him a dark pair.
I think I think the whitewash is way too...
Too casual.
It's too casual. It's too retro. The only people that are able to pull off the retro jeans look right now are much younger than 53. The same way with the intentionally ripped and torn jeans. You can't be 57 and have your knees and your thighs ripped out the way the young people do. That looks weird. Unless you're a refugee and you're crossing Syria right now, you really shouldn't have that look. You should not have that look on purpose.
I'm okay with you wearing blue jeans as long as they're not skin tight and...
Well, there's part of the problem.
Yeah, that's it. As long as they're not skin tight.
Well, seriously, who's telling me to stop wearing jeans?
I don't know.
Research.
Is this some fashion person? Is it... They're worried about my circulation? Is it a scientific thing?
Well, Steve, there's nothing I can say to satisfy you about this.
I know. I'm just wondering if
it's not doctors. It's just It's just people who are cleverer than you and me, and they said it's a bad look.
Yeah, well, they're stupid.
Are these people who are over the age of 53? Because I wouldn't.
Of course not.
No, I wouldn't be surprised because my mom always says I'm too old to wear a dress like that, or I'm too old to wear skinny.
Your mother
jeans.
Says that about herself. Yeah, I think a lot of us. When you're in your 50s, you start to rethink things. I love these kind of jeans. How many of us don't have a favorite pair of blue jeans that you hung on to for years and that you can still remember to this day, or that you still have and you'll never get rid of them because you just love those jeans? And then the clock ticks, and there's 60 over there, and you realize that while you may still love those jeans, it's just not the right look for your age anymore. And it's a terrible thing to confront, but you have to stop wearing them, comma, researchers say, period.
Just let them go. There's a bunch of sales going on right now.
The research into Britain's jean-wearing habits has revealed just how hard it is to find the perfect pair. Most of us spend up to 5 days looking for the ideal fit. Usually when I go into a store to buy blue jeans, I'm on a mission, and I will walk out with blue jeans. sometimes I don't. You want them to fit right, but I sure haven't spent 5 days.
It's different for guys.
Steve, the study was by the parcel delivery and return service Collect Plus, and it revealed the stress we experience while jean shopping, with 6% of us becoming so upset that we burst into tears over the options.
So we shouldn't buy the jeans because we can't handle the stress of picking them out.
That's what it says here.
Okay.
Typically, we squeeze into at least 3 pair while searching for the right fit, but 1 in 10 of us tries on as many as 6 or more jeans during our quest. But once we have that perfect pair, we tend to stick with them. It's usually 3 years before we have to go out and buy another pair. And for 1 in 5 people, we'll keep the same pair of blue jeans for 5 years or more. That's what I mean. I mean, like, okay, all-time favorite pair of blue jeans. Go.
Paige.
That's a brand?
Yeah.
The Madewell.
The Madewell? That's a pair of blue jeans?
It's a brand. Sorry, yeah. Violetta.
The blue ones.
Okay. I had a pair of Lucky brand jeans I bought a few years ago that I really, really liked. I don't remember what happened to them. But
they wore out at the knee.
And then if I go back, I had a pair of Jordache with the horsey stitched on the pocket.
Oh.
And I was still wearing them when I met my wife. And only years later did she tell me that that was one of the singular most unattractive things about me at that time.
Yeah, well,
but I thought they were working.
And one of the most endearing things is you're not afraid to tell that story.
I also had a pair of Calvin Klein with the thin strip.
Okay, make it stop.
But it was a disco era, and it seemed to be the right. Those were the right jeans for that moment.
But the moment has passed.
Hold on. Can I just justify your wearing of these Jordache jeans?
My producer, ladies and gentlemen.
Sarah Jessica Parker is modeling them in Google Images.
No. No.
Not in the 80s or early 90s either. Now.
Right. And Sarah and John have what in common?
Here's the top female celebrity jean wearers.
Similar age, by the way.
Victoria Beckham is number 4 on the list. Rihanna's number 5. On the male side, David Beckham is 1. Daniel Craig is 2. George Clooney, 3. Prince Harry, 4. Justin Timberlake, 5. And on the list goes. Yeah, I'm none of those. I think that's a different set of rules. Steve, you don't have a favorite pair of blue jeans you remember in your youth or adulthood? You don't have a pair of blue jeans? I think we get more emotionally bonded with our blue jeans than we do pretty much any other garment of clothing that we wear.
Well, when I was in preteen or early teens, I did have a pair of hip-hugging elephant bells.
What I'm talking about.
That were a soft, light blue.
That's right.
But now I do Levi's or the Gap. That's it. Jordache.
I bought a pair of jeans at Target recently because I just wanted to see how the other half lives. And I'm wearing them now. They're pretty swell. Like $20 or 20-some bucks. It was a great bargain, and I happen to be happy with the way it's working out. But I have spent a multiple of that for nice jeans at Nordstrom when I was feeling rich and sassy.
I used to buy up for the Luckies.
Yeah.
But I wasn't kidding. They wore out at the knee quicker than any other pair I've ever had.
I had a pair of jeans that had a little elastic in the waist, but a buckle built into the elastic waistband in the front, and it buckled like a Navy anchor. And then it was real tight in the thigh and the derriere, and then blossomed into some ginormous bells about mid-calf.
I'm going to ask you to please tell me this was the 1970s.
I don't think that's important.
Oh, no, it is.
And are those from the maternity
important.
Section?
And they're not, they didn't make the move with you, did they? John?
I'm just recollecting my favorite pair of blue jeans, and that would be all time in the top three. I would say that might be one or two, the Jordache number 2 or 1. Again, it was a special time in my life. I was dancing. And then I would say that lucky pair that I bought recently was pretty awesome as well. All right, let's take some calls. We'll start with Bob. You're on WGN Radio. Bob, researchers say over the age of 53,
hey,
you shouldn't
hey, John,
wear them.
How
Hi.
Are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I have probably, I'm six. I will be 66 in March, and I have probably 12 pair of jeans.
Yeah.
Black, blue, tan, lined, and flannel lined. And I use the flannel ones for work. The tan ones are a little bit more dressier, but it's Levi's and Wrangler.
Under the new spending bill, those will be disallowed, and there'll actually be a truck is going to pull up. A federal truck is going to pull up, and they're going to take those jeans away from you.
No, John, they can't, because that's what I love. And I still work outside, so I got to have jeans.
Yeah. Well, now that almost might be a special category, but maybe not. But I mean, I think if you're an outdoor person, that's almost a different consideration. I think we're talking about here just for aesthetic. But you like the look of them. You like those jeans, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I like those jeans. And I'm still a suit guy, too, for other phases of my work.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I'm tired of screwing up pants. You know,
right.
Good.
Right.
At work.
Yeah. No.
Know?
I hear you completely. And so there's a guy over the age of 60, and he's got several pair. We'll pick it up here in just a minute. Tell me about that favorite pair. You have one. Violetta, you mentioned a brand name real quick. What was that again?
Page Jeans.
And do you still own those, or have those come and gone?
Oh, yeah. I buy the same ones over and over again.
Oh, that's your brand. That's the one you go to. Huh?
They're the only ones that fit right.
That's the thing. You got to find those ones. Blue jeans, over 53. You're not supposed to. Let's talk to Lisa. You're on WGN. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I'm wearing little jeans with little pearls and sparklies and little things, and they're straight leg, and I'm wearing a big shirt with them and little sparkly shoes, and I think it's okay.
How old are you?
54.
Oh, my God, woman. You're 1 year past the deadline. You can't be doing that.
I know. I'm afraid the fashion police are going to come carry me away this weekend.
It sounds like you're rocking it, actually. You know what you should do is take a picture of yourself and upload it to my Facebook, and we'll find a portrait in a national museum somewhere that looks just like you. Have you tried that yet?
No, I would. I haven't, but I've looked at the pictures, and Violetta's doing a fantastic job on her app there, taking care of that for you.
Yeah,
thank you.
The Violetta is what the app is called. Hey, listen, thank you for the call, Lisa. Good for you. I appreciate you joining us. This is, I think, Dale. Dale, this is John. You're on WGN. Hi.
How are you?
Good. You're on the air. What do you want to say?
Born and raised in Munster, Indiana, live in Madison, Wisconsin now.
Uh-oh.
I started college in 1967, and my first pair of Levi's were $3.95.
I believe that.
Later that year, they went up to $4.95.
Outrage.
And I thought that was a rip-off, you know?
You remember this. So are you still... Well, how old are you now?
69.
You still wear blue jeans?
You bet.
And how do you look?
Overweight.
No, you look good. That's how you look in them. You look good.
Yeah, you need glasses too. as my age went up, my waist went up.
Yeah, well, that'll happen. I mean, so, trust me, you're not alone.
I could lose 20 pounds, but. My kids always used to introduce us as, this is my mom and dad, they're old hippies.
Yeah, I think there's a little of that in all of us, and I don't think we want to abandon it. I got to run. Thank you for the call, Dale. Fran, 81, said, I've never worn blue jeans. And John on line one, our last call on this. John, you're on the air. What do you want to say?
Yeah, John, first of all, thank you for coming back to Chicago. You brought me back to WGN.
Welcome back, sir.
I called because there's some places out there, like Rural King is one, and I believe Farm and Fleet.
Yeah.
They've got really good-looking jeans for $9.95.
Seriously?
Seriously, yes. They're good. I use them all the time just to, you know, work around the house. You know, you got dirt and stuff like that. Who cares? You got a $9 pair of blue jeans.
Those are disposable. You don't even have to wash them.
No, they're great. I know people even wear them out in public, so... I mean, you don't go shopping and stuff.
That's funny. Hey, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you listening to GN, too. It's 129. The Chicago Tribune editorial today is worth talking about. We will after the news as well. And that is this. If Steve Bannon wants to come to the University of Chicago or if the UFC wants him to come and speak, they're all for it. And so am I. We'll talk about that in the next half hour. Plus, we have a guest joining us in the next half hour who was on the Channel 9 news last night. A doctor who treats people with depression. Steve, I actually cut the story out, and we reached out to that University of Chicago professor, Luigi Zingales, at the Booth School, and asked him to come on, and he said, no, I don't have anything to say about that. He's the guy that got Steve Bannon to make his first public appearance at the University of Chicago soon, since being dismissed from the Trump administration and leaving Breitbart. And what a coup for the UFC. I think he thought we were going to... you know, sandbag the guy, that we were going to say bad things. I said, no, I completely support his speaking here. The professor declined our invitation. Maybe he'll change his mind. There's the Chicago Tribune today editorializing about it, and they, like me, think he should be able to speak there. They say, we think he's a... They
well,
said, we
why
think he's
shouldn't
a,
he?
Well, because I don't like these Nazi speakers that tour the college campuses these days and offer nothing but hate...
Right, I agree with you, but all this guy offers is a conservative alternate point of view. He's not a Nazi.
I think he's
right?
I think he's a white nationalist. I think he. Here's a line from the Chicago Tribune's editorial today. No question in our view, Bannon is a disreputable character who used Breitbart to fan the flames of white nationalism. When Trump failed to condemn neo-Nazis after Charlottesville, you could see Bannon's ugly influence. I agree with that. But part of that package is, this is the guy that was inside the White House. He was a senior advisor to this president. That's something these other knuckleheads touring campuses don't have. That's valuable. And this professor wants to moderate a discussion between Bannon and somebody on the other side of the immigration and globalization issues. Amen to the UFC for that. How is that too ugly to have on campus? And yet there are some professors and students at the U of C saying no to that. I don't understand. More about that in a little bit. There was a story on Channel 9 last night on their Medical Watch segment that I believe is still on. It was like 9 minutes long. And it featured Dr. Balnandra, who you have heard on this radio station before. He's with a company called Ketamine Centers of Chicago, or Ketamine Solutions. In fact, their website is ketaminechicago.com. Ketamine is a drug, and it is used to treat depression and also pain management. He's an anesthesiologist. Having seen that story and knowing a little bit about him, I invited him to come back into our studio today. Dr. Nandra, welcome back.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure to be here.
So what did they do last night on Channel 9?
They showed our story, and we featured a patient of ours, a gentleman named Jason, who I treated for depression, which he had his entire life. And after his series of infusions, and actually after just two or three infusions, he started feeling markedly better, and he's really completely turned around and says he literally feels better now than he ever has before. He didn't know how bad off he was until after he got these treatments.
I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. You don't know this story. But a friend of mine said, oh, my friend, somebody I don't know, but a friend of my friend, went to Ketamine Solutions. Ketamine Solutions, that's what you call your
IV
business.
Solution.
IV solution. Yeah. KetamineChicago.com. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing how it turned her life around. That suddenly she was less angry, suddenly she was less hostile, and she almost didn't know what she was missing until she realized that she could control or repress her depression, her hostility. It's a wonderful story.
Yeah, she was actually an amazing patient, and you're absolutely right.
Do you know the person I'm talking about? I don't know that you do. Maybe you do.
Maybe I do, maybe I don't. But like a lot of patients, some patients actually will turn around after just one infusion, and it's really remarkable. And sometimes it'll take two, occasionally it'll take three, and then it's like a light switch goes off. And the third or fourth time I see them, I'm almost shocked. It's almost an emotional situation for all of us at the clinic because we literally feel like somebody else walked in the door.
What's ketamine?
Ketamine is an anesthetic drug that was developed in the 1950s. Has been used in anesthesia for 50 years.
Surgery, I will get ketamine?
Sometimes. It depends on the surgical situation.
That's not what knocks you out, though, right?
No, not necessarily, no. It's used more in certain surgical situations as well as intensive care units. It's used on the battlefields, actually, a lot for medics.
Why?
Because ketamine is an incredibly strong drug for pain. And when soldiers get injured in the battlefields, a syringe of ketamine can be given to them, or a dose of ketamine, and they can be taken off and airlifted, getting off the battlefield safely.
Is it like morphine or something like that?
It's different from morphine. It's actually much more powerful in how it controls or eliminates pain, but its advantage is that it does not cause respiratory depression and all those other things. So, in other words, you can give that patient a big dose of ketamine, and you don't have to worry about their breathing and their airway and having to put a breathing tube in, and you can get them safely and pain-free to a hospital.
Who diagnoses these patients as depressed? I mean, how do you come to administering ketamine to them?
Well, they usually come either from their primary healthcare provider, from their psychiatrist, sometimes from their therapist or psychiatrist. A lot of patients will just find us, however, on the internet and through media, like today, and they'll contact us, and then we'll screen them. I'll screen them for health-wise, and then I'll get involved with their psych screening. We have a psychiatric team also that clears them, and we discuss them with their primary care provider also.
So then it's an IV solution that you give them with the ketamine in it?
Yes, it's a small IV bag of IV solution, just normal saline, and we put the right dose of ketamine in it, and we infuse it over about an hour.
How many treatments does the average person get?
For depression, it's 6 treatments typically over a period of 2 weeks or so, every other day. Each infusion lasts 45 minutes. Patient takes about 10 or 15 minutes to recover. And, you know, within an hour or so afterwards, they're feeling back to normal.
And after 2 weeks, they may experience some improvement. How long does that improvement last?
That's kind of the always the tough question to answer, because there is really it's really difficult to predict that. But what we see and what most treatment centers see is anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks improvement all the way up to months. I've had some patients that only come in once every 4 or 5 months for a single maintenance booster.
This is, let's see, I'm trying to read the name on the screen. It looks like Tony. Tony, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Yeah, hi. So I've got a question for Doctor. Gabapentin, maybe it's a similar drug, but it's used for neurological issues and people with maybe fibromyalgia where they end up totally clearing up their pain issue depending on the dosage they get. But my question then is mentally and awareness-wise, do you lose anything in the process?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. That's a concern for a lot of people who take drugs to treat one thing, then they're in a fog.
Yeah. Yeah, gabapentin has that thing. It kind of really sedates people and puts them in a bit of a fog, and especially when you get to the higher doses. It's not as nearly as effective as a pain control drug as ketamine is, and ketamine does not really give you that effect. There's really no significant changes in cognition. Between your infusions, even an hour afterwards, you're pretty much back to 100% normal.
You can be a little loopy after a treatment, right?
Yeah, for about 30 to 45 minutes, depending on the treatment and the length of the treatment and what we're treating, of course. For depression, they're really low doses, so typically much less of that with depression.
All right. Tony, good luck. Thanks for the call. Lisa, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi,
Lisa. Are you there?
Yes. Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. Yeah, she's listening to the delay. Reminder of that elephant. We'll come back to her maybe in a minute. I know she's interested in how is it administered for depression the same way for pain, and that is through an IV. Here's total disclosure. My nephew just spent a week going to your clinic for pain management. How much of your business is pain? How much of it is depression?
I would say it's about 25% pain at this point, and probably about 75 or 80% depression and other mental illness.
Yeah. Fibromyalgia, that kind of pain, or migraine headache, that kind of pain?
Both. Fibromyalgia, migraine headaches, just neuropathic pain. I had a patient who had had chemotherapy for a cancer, and he came in depressed, but he also had neuropathy, in other words, numbing and tingling in his fingers and his toes, and really just uncomfortable feeling from the chemo. And after three treatments, that started going away. And it has been shown to happen with ketamine in some clinical studies. So we gave him a few extra treatments, and he was almost 100% back to normal. And that was actually a big improvement for him and really improved his quality of life.
Hey, Laura, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hey, I have suffered with IBS for so many years, and I find it's a daily struggle, and that makes me really depressed, fighting that and esophageal reflux. Have you had patients that have come in, and it causes a lot of anxiety, too, because when the
IBS is irritable bowel, right?
Irritable bowel, correct.
Yeah.
And it's a source of anxiety when you're not, when you don't function, you know, it's a constant struggle. And I'm wondering if that has ever, if you've had patients that have dealt with those issues?
Yeah.
We have not, Lori. And I've not really found anything in literature to treat that kind of pain with ketamine. It's typically more neurological, neuropathic type of conditions. I mean, of course, it would help with things like anxiety and depression that come along with that, but I don't think it would really help much with that actual condition.
Laura, good luck. Thanks for the phone call. That was one of the things we have to wrap this up now, doctor, but that was one of the other things you told me off the air, and that is, it sounds like, anyway, this is sort of cutting edge. You guys are discovering instances where it's applicable that might surprise you. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. Ketamine was discovered in kind of a serendipitous situation, and that's what we're finding also. You know, we treat a patient with a spectrum of things, and we see other things improving, and it's pretty remarkable. It's a safe drug, and that's the key to this whole thing, and well-researched. So we know that it's effective and safe.
A lot of our listeners suffer from arthritis, but that's not a neurological disorder. So do you use this for that?
We don't. Uh, for for pain that's of bone origin and joints and things like that, and even soft tissues, it's not going to be that effective. Again, it's more effective against those neurological and neuropathic type conditions.
The story was a pretty long one. They featured last night on Channel 9. I believe they ran it again on the noon news today. The company is called, let me just make sure I turn over the card and do this right, Ketamine Chicago. K-E-T-A-M-I-N-E Chicago, KetamineChicago.com. And Dr. Bal Nandra is in our studio. Well, congratulations. I know that a lot of people are very thankful for what you guys are doing over there, Bal.
Thank you very much, John. I really appreciate it. And thanks for having me on the show again.
Hi. Well, here I am. It's 1:53 on WGN. This is John Williams. I don't have to read that just yet. I can put this here. By the way, it's a Friday. On Fridays, we do our Bright Side. Bright Side is where you call in. Tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling, and we will smile with you. The Bright Side will come your way at 2:40. What's your good news? So, why Trump's desire to fire Mueller may invite an obstruction case, and why it's such a big deal, USA Today. 8 stories on the front page of Time magazine today. 8 stories on the front digital page of Time magazine. And now, if we have 2 audio clips to play here, let's just drag those out for just a second. So the first one is Sean Hannity the other night when it was first percolating. The New York Times had reported, the fake failing New York Times, had reported that the president earlier last summer had asked his counsel to fire the special counsel, that McGrath guy he wanted to fire, began. He wanted him to fire Robert Mueller. This is Sean Hannity denying that Trump asked Mueller to be fired.
At this hour, the New York Times is trying to distract you. They have a story that Trump wanted Mueller fired sometime last June, and our sources, and I've checked in with many of them, they're not confirming that tonight. And the president's attorney dismissed the story and says, nope, no comment, we're not going there. And how many times has the New York Times and others gotten it wrong?
Later in that same broadcast...
All right, so we have sources tonight just confirming to Ed Henry that, yeah, maybe Donald Trump wanted to fire the special counsel for conflict. Does he not have the right to raise those questions? You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow night. We have a shocking video of the day to bring you, by the way. This footage comes to us from Arizona, where you see that red SUV, high-speed police chase. Ultimately,
I don't know what's better, him backpedaling on the story or... But he's going to cut away from that to show you cool video of a red SUV in a crash. I understand picking sides, and you don't have to apologize for being an apologist. But when you're caught red-handed, or the president is, can't you own it? Sean, can't you just say, hey, we were wrong? It is a big deal. The president did seek to have the special counsel fired. And I don't know what the end of that paragraph is, but do you have to just shrug it off? And yet he does, so that he can get you to the real cool video of a car crash.
Would you please just stop talking? I want to hear the audio about the car crash.
I don't, you know, it's the
That was the car crash.
It's the juxtaposition of those two that just makes it even more funny.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Wait.
Here's John Williams.
I already did. Mm-mm. You got to come up with another one. It's 2:07. This is John. Don't miss our Bright Side segment. We do that on Fridays. You'll call in, tell us some good news in your world while you are smiling. That's your Bright Side. What is that, please, in about 30 minutes? Also in the next half hour, things to do this weekend. We feature that on Fridays, too, right after Steve's 2:30 edition of WGN Radio News. I'm reading from Time magazine, reports that President Donald Trump attempted to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller last June have led to renewed calls for long-stalled legislation protecting the investigation. After multiple news outlets reported that Trump ordered White House lawyer Don McGahn to fire Mueller, then just a month into his position, Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut called on the Senate Judiciary Committee to move forward on 2 bills that would make it harder to fire the special counsel. I did not know there was such legislation even being offered. person who wrote that piece for Time magazine is Nash Jenkins, and he joins us on WGN. Nash, it's John Williams. How are you?
I'm good, John. How you doing?
You follow Capitol Hill for Time.
I do.
So you knew about this legislation? You know, I guess there's a million bills out there, but I didn't realize there were two bills out there. Is it specifically to protect this special investigator or special investigators generally?
Well, it would protect special investigators generally, but it's unequivocally prompted by concerns that President Trump has been seeking to get rid of Robert Mueller. Even though a lot of Republicans, you know, for months said that was not a concern of theirs, the two bills are bipartisan. There are folks on both sides of the aisle who have said for a long time, listen, we're worried about the White House intervening in this investigation. We need to do what we can to bulwark Robert Mueller from any sort of White House interference.
How would either of these bills work?
Sure. Well, to start, let me just go ahead and explain how President Trump could fire Robert Mueller today if he wanted to. He'd have to go through the Department of Justice, specifically through his Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. The two bills in question, one is sponsored by Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina, a Republican, and Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware. It would tighten the stipulations to where a special counsel could only be fired in the event of legal misconduct, dereliction of duty, incapacity, or conflict of interest. That's what the bill says. And the other, which is sponsored by Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who is, of course, a Republican, and Cory Booker of New Jersey, who's a Democrat, would basically create a extensive judicial review process before such a request could be carried out. In other words, they make it a lot harder for President Trump to say, okay, I don't want this guy looking into me anymore.
Well, he defended the notion, or at least some of his advocates did, by putting forward three instances where they felt that Mueller had some sort of conflict of interest with the president, even though he's a Republican, that he would, you know, regardless of what his findings were, be an illogical choice. They were offering that up. I don't know that that's a dereliction of duty or satisfies the first set of requirements, but I guess it could be a gray area, right? Is this person appropriate or derelict or not?
Yeah, I mean, speaking objectively, John, I think it's a bit of a reach. That said, there are a lot of Republicans in Congress who are more than happy to wield those talking points to make their case against the special investigation. There are a lot of Republicans, especially in the House, where members tend to be a little more conservative and a little more belligerent, to shut this down however they can, to demonstrate that the special counsel investigation is politically motivated, is driven by, ulterior motives. There are more than a few members of the House who will, you know, point to the, you know, Clinton world behind all of this. I think frankly, this bill in question is not designed to really determine whether or not, you know, Mueller is impartial or partial. I think it's really designed to protect him.
But the Republican base, the mainstream conservatives in the Congress, don't want Mueller fired, right? That's a disaster if the president does that. I mean, you may want to protect him from it, but firing Mueller does not help the president or Republicans. Am I right about that?
No, of course. And you know, it's a question of optics. And to be frank, neither party in this Congress has been particularly good at managing optics. But you're right. I think most Republicans in Congress have the common sense to say, you know, this would be a disaster. I mean, look at the last president to try to remove a special counsel was Richard Nixon, and we know how that ended up. That said, you have a lot of Republicans who are sick and tired of this investigation for a few reasons. They repeat the president's point that it's a political conspiracy to sort of detract from the legitimacy of Trump's election. They really do believe it is a politically motivated initiative. And they think the FBI is rigged against President Trump. There's been all this talk in recent weeks among Republicans on the Hill about a memo, ordered by Devin Nunes, who's a Republican in the House, that basically discloses that the FBI, you know, as is acting, you know, working against Trump. And There have been a lot of Republicans clamoring for that memo to be released because they think it'll demonstrate that they're right, that this special counsel is illegitimate, and that it should be shut down.
I was reading somewhere, though, last night. I think it might have been in the latest issue of the New Yorker. And they said after Trump got elected, his very first visit was to the FBI, right? To sort of state his allegiance to the men and women. Remember, he stood in the front of the wall of agents who'd lost their lives, and he sort of pledged his allegiance to their mission. It was a bizarre, bizarre speech that he gave. But it's been a funny relationship, hasn't it been, all along between Donald Trump and the FBI?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because he did the exact same thing. I think it was either earlier this month or a month ago. He went to the graduation out in Quantico.
Yep.
and gave a meandering, bizarre, extemporaneous speech in which he vacillated between crowing about his own electoral victory and speaking to the importance of Blue Lives Matter and all that. So, you know, he sort of doesn't know how he feels about these folks. You know, for example, 20 minutes before he gave that speech, he was on the White House lawn speaking to reporters. And he said, you know, this is a politically motivated investigation, et cetera, et cetera. That said, I think expecting consistency from this president is holding him to a bit too high of a standard.
No kidding. So what's the status of these two bills to make? By the way, I just want to explore that notion. If suppose the president fires Robert Mueller. I mean, today he could, tomorrow he could. Even if you chose to put some governors on that, he would probably still have a means to fire the special investigator. And I think there are some of us who thought, oh, it's too bad he didn't. Because if you think that Donald Trump is a dangerous president for the United States, if you wish he weren't the president of the United States, if he had fired him in June, it's a lot less likely that Donald Trump would be president. You may see that's terrible, but shoot, you could have been rooting for that in June because A, it would have been interesting, and B, he might not be president right now. Tell me that that's at least a logical notion on my part.
No. It's a very interesting point you made. I think the one thing that those of us reporting in Washington have learned, though, is that trafficking in such hypotheticals during these times is problematic, simply because the course of things changes all the time. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. That said, I don't think impeachment right now is feasible in this Congress, which is, you know, controlled. Both houses are controlled by Republicans.
No, they're not going to impeach him. The economy's too good. And besides, the 25th Amendment's irrelevant, too. He's got a higher probability of being impeached than he does leaving office via the 25th Amendment. And I don't think either of those are going to happen. Probably the only way he leaves office early is something happens because of this investigation. They find him that would then lead to impeachment. I mean, even if they find him guilty of some charge, then he still gets to be president. He's not going to go to jail, but they would probably then impeach him, right?
Sure. And that, you know, that remains to be seen. I mean, you could predict all sorts of things, but for right now, I think the Republicans in Congress are pretty satisfied with President Trump. I mean, you know, he's a member of their party, even though he may waver from the talking point sometimes. They got tax reform through Congress with him as president.
Yeah.
They've confirmed like an unprecedented number of conservative judges to the court with him as president. He's sort of exactly where they need him to be. So for right now, I don't think they're clamoring for any sort of shift in power. But would I rule it out? Ask me again in 6 months.
I know this isn't the story that you wrote for Time Magazine today, Nash, but if he tried to fire the special investigator but did not because the attorney he asked to do it refused to cooperate, what's the big deal? I mean, it's just talking points then. It's just an air punch he threw and it didn't land. There's no crime in that. I know that's how they're going to pitch it. What's your reaction to that?
I think the subtext of this story is twofold. Both points are interesting. The first is that, you know, President Trump is tempestuous, the example there being the fact that he wanted to fire the special prosecutor. The second point is that there is a lot of internal turmoil at the White House. There are a lot of senior members of his administration who are extremely disgruntled, extremely jaded, extremely frustrated. And the best example of that would be Don McGahn threatening, you know, the White House counsel threatening to quit if President Trump did that. I mean, and more generally, you look at the turnover rate within his White House, you know, morale is low, rations are thin, as they say. You know, that's, I think the big story here is the volatility in the executive branch, however hard they try to hide it.
That's Nash Jenkins from Time Magazine. You can read their stories there. They have about 8 on the front digital page at time.com. By the way, I'm always intrigued when I find a new reporter or correspondent of some sort, actually anybody on Twitter, what their bio is. Nash Jenkins' bio on Twitter is Washington correspondent at Time, covering Congress, previously in Hong Kong. Stop taking yourself too seriously. You know, I suppose we would all benefit from that.
Yeah, I guess so, John.
Nice to talk to you, Nash. We'll visit again,
yeah,
all right?
Hey, great to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
That's Nash Jenkins at Time Magazine. He referenced, or I don't know, somehow or another in the back of my mind as we were having this conversation, I was thinking about the duration. He said that a lot of Republicans and the president certainly want this investigation to be over as soon as possible. I don't know how long the investigation is supposed to take. I suppose it's supposed to take as long as it takes. I asked Olive, how long did the Clinton investigation by Ken Starr go? She just handed me a 2-page article. The investigation of Bill Clinton began in January of 1994 when Janet Reno appointed Special Prosecutor Robert Fisk to the Whitewater investigation. Fisk's appointment first prompted universal praise among Republicans, but the praise lasted for several months until Fisk wrapped up his criminal investigation within 6 months of his appointment. That short investigation, combined with Fisk's announcement that there was no evidence that issues involving Whitewater or other personal legal matters of the president or Mrs. Clinton were a factor in Vince Foster's suicide, holy cow, caused Republicans to declare Fisk unfit for the job. Congress decided to reauthorize the independent counsel, so they got somebody else to do it after 6 months. Think about that. So they said, all right, we don't like that. We'll go get somebody on the other party and we'll have him do it. 3-judge panel overseeing the independent counsel decided to replace Fisk with Ken Starr. In December of 1997, Starr shut down the Whitewater investigation because of insufficient evidence. So, to review, it started in January of 94 and ended on the last month of 1997, all of 94, all of 95, all of 96, all of 97, if you go Fisk to Ken Starr.
Was anyone ever charged in it? I mean, certainly the Clintons weren't. I mean,
when the investigation shuts down, a month later, Linda Tripp calls Deputy Independent Counsel Jackie Bennett and said she had taped conversations with a woman named Monica Lewinsky about affair of the president. God, I knew that was a cloud over his administration, but I didn't realize it was...
Oh, it was from day one.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the records in the White House in a closet, the Whitewater, you know...
Remember the woman that sort of duped her in? She was recording the conversation.
It was Linda Tripp.
That was Linda Tripp. Hence the name Linda Tripp.
Yeah, that's why they call her Linda Tripp.
Tripp. Man. So I don't know how long this investigation's been going on when the clock started, but it's not been 6 months and it's not been 4 years.
Well, there already are guilty pleas involved in it, too.
Say that again?
Well, there already are guilty pleas.
Oh, you mean, we've got, four of
two.
Them, right?
I'm going to go with two, Michael Flynn and Papadopoulos.
Yeah.
The others have been charged but not pleaded guilty yet.
Just refreshing my Facebook page to see what you all look like, the pictures you send us compared to pictures in museums. And I'm also looking at the doomsday clock. I'm King John on Facebook. Like me there, King John on Facebook. I'm looking at the doomsday clock and the stories about that. I'm not real worried about the end of the world. I used to be more about that than I used to be. But they say now it's 2 minutes to midnight, the closest since 1953. The Bulletin of Atomic Science advance the symbolic doomsday clock a notch closer to the end of humanity Thursday, moving it ahead by 30 seconds. It is now set at 2 minutes to midnight. 1 to 100, Steve. How nervous are you about the end of the world because of either climate change or nuclear weapons or something like that? 1 to 100.
I think that Register got its heyday out of the nuclear annihilation, so I'm a little less concerned now.
I am, like, way less concerned. Really? I'm more worried about a comet hitting us or a giant asteroid.
So if you get the fake alert like they did in Hawaii, you'd be like, ah, pshaw, it can't be real.
I would have been. I would have totally blown that off, even though it said this is not a test. I would have gone, yeah, it's a test.
This is not a test. It is a mistake. This is a mistake.
They need to do that. Their warning now needs to go, okay, remember last time? It needs to have that sort of language in there to motivate people. Go, we know that you don't think this is real, but this one really is real, we promise. Hashtag not a mistake. Hashtag that guy got fired. Hashtag it's not politics. Hashtag this is for real. I don't know what they're supposed to put in there, but I would not be motivated. And I've been following the news like everybody else. We're worried about this president. We're worried about North Korea. We're worried about blah, blah, blah. Global warming is a big deal. Good Lord, climate change will end us before nuclear weapons do. And I think an asteroid is in there as well. Asteroid pops up on somebody's telescope and pfft, we got nothing. We got nothing.
That's the most irrational fear.
That one worries me a lot. Yeah, because Earth's had cataclysmic things. Yellowstone. Yellowstone could just go kapow. There's a whole bunch of hot magma just sitting under Yellowstone. It's like a trampoline of just whoa, whoa, whoa. And any day that could just go boom and just wipe out the United States. That could happen. I think about that stuff, yeah. I mean, put that on your doomsday clock and smoke it. But this stuff, nah, I think that's them just trying to get headlines. But if they said tonight on TV, oh no, X4927, an icy rock a million miles away is going to be here, we got nothing. And that could happen. You think the dinosaurs, if they'd had cable TV, they would have been shook, Jack, and there would be nothing they could do about it.
So are you saying that their doomsday clock was closer to zero or they're even further away?
Who, the dinosaurs?
Yeah. Were they worried?
I don't know the answer to that question. It's 2:28.
Well, I'll tell you the answer. They didn't have clocks.
Hold on a second. The only thing I want the government to do is figure out the budget and the DACA thing. I mean, that's been our only news story for 3 weeks. So Durbin says they were going to meet Monday or Tuesday of next week?
Monday there was supposed to be a meeting, according to a Durbin aide,
right,
between a bipartisan group of senators and Homeland Security and the
right
administration.
Right. I mean, and February 8th, tick-tock, tick-tock.
Right. And the administration had canceled the meeting, the briefing,
right, because,
with the lawmakers.
Because,
well, at first they didn't give a reading and a reason. Then someone with Homeland Security tweeted out that it was a scheduling issue, nothing more.
What was it, Bunko Night at Homeland? I mean, what in the world could they possibly have on their schedule that would trump a meeting with the Senate to figure this out?
I don't know, but obviously Durbin's people are trying to make this very public.
Think about, I know, really. So maybe they should just be quiet about it and fix it. This calling each other out and calling name calling in this little 17-day window we have is not helping.
A or B, it does help to get them going.
Yeah.
You know, rather than, so it was supposed to be with Durbin, Cornyn, who's number two in the Senate, Republican,
yeah,
House Whip Steny Hoyer, and Kevin McCarthy, from California. He's the guy with the Starburst guy. That's not fair, but he's the number two guy.
Well, in that case, maybe then this will help, because the president tweeted, DACA has been made in increasingly, I'll just read it. Remember, it's the president, so it doesn't have to be in English. DACA has been made, oh no, he did do it right. DACA has been made increasingly difficult by the fact that crying Chuck Schumer took such a beating over the shutdown that he is unable to act on immigration! So maybe that is a way to motivate Chuck Schumer to get more involved. Yeah, that's the ticket. Meanwhile, Homeland Security is too busy. They've got scheduling conflicts. Maybe it's the annual Homeland Security golf outing. We've got tea times. I don't know what they're doing, but whatever they're doing, they're too busy to meet with the Senate. And besides, February 8th, well, that's like a month from now. This is like our kids who say, don't worry, I'll get it done. And you go, yeah, but honey, February 8th, I know that sounds really far away, but...
It's not a month, it's 2 weeks.
It's just like 2 weeks, dear. Well, because I know February is different than January, but that doesn't mean it's going to be 30 days or 28 days. We need to get on this. You need to get on this. All right, I'll do it, Mom. Door slams.
I'll do it.
All right.
Okay.
So then you walk back in. They say, did you talk to him about resolving the DACA thing? Yes, I talked to him. He said he'll get it done. All right. I'm just saying, it don't look to me like he's getting the DACA thing done.
I think I hear video games behind the door.
Are you guys playing video games in there? You're supposed to be fixing DACA. No,
I think he's on the Twitter.
Put that door down. Come on in there. And the only reason you want your kid to get it done is because you don't want to fight with your wife about it anymore.
Ugh.
All right. Well, I'm sure, honey, they'll get it done. They know this DACA thing's important, and we can't go without a budget or a spending bill, so they'll be fine. Listen, he's your kid, too, you know. He's your president, too, you know. I didn't vote for him. You did. All right, I'm done. It's 2:40. This is WGN Radio. I know what you're thinking. Hey, that's Milky Chance. It's one of producer Ellip's favorite performers. Milky Chance plays tonight at the Riviera. 7:30. $35 on Ticketfly. Northwestern Winter Chamber Music Festival also takes place. The Dover Quartet plays at 7:30 tonight at Pick Stager. That's at Northwestern in Evanston, of course. The North American debut of Las Ideas by Argentinian writer and director Federico Leon is tonight at 7:30. Tickets are $30 at the MCA website. This is a multimedia performance. It explores the creative process. And Chicago Restaurant Week is right around the corner. Do you take that in? It begins, it says here, tomorrow night and goes through February 8th. It's the 11th annual culinary celebration. It's prefix menus at some of your favorite restaurants in Chicago. You can make reservations now at choosechicago.com. Marcia Lyle from WGN Radio Sales just strolled into our studio. Hi, Marcia.
I'm here. That means it's Friday.
That means it's time for the bright side. Marcia always strolls down to help us with the flood of texts. Ellip will handle the flood of phone calls, and we'll all start by giving you our good news. We want to know yours, too. Do you have another one for us this week? I won't make you give it early. I know you don't like to preview your hand.
Yeah, I have one for you.
Okay, it doesn't sound like your heart is in it this time. Sounds like you're searching a little.
It's always in it.
Okay. Violetta, you got a bright side you're going to share with the whole class?
Yes, sir.
Kevin's in there reading sports stuff, but I presume he's got some golf event planned. Steve, bright side. Ellip, bright side. Yep. Everybody ready to roll? Here's the number, 312-981-7200. Call or text right now your bright side. Give me some good news. We could use it. The weekend is here. This is WGN. Let's review. Do you know what the one rule for the bright side is?
This is the no judgment zone.
We do not judge other people's happiness, whatever your bright side is. Kevin, you going to play?
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it is that's making you happy, we're not going to go, that's not a good one. We try and limit it to one, but if you guys don't mind, I have two bright sides that I'd like to share with the whole class.
Yes, you can.
All right. Now I got to get the mouse to work.
We'll allow it.
All right. Stand by. Rolling it around to right about there.
Some things in life are bad.
Call me now.
They can really make you mad.
I do have an open line.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
312.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
981.
That grumble, give a whistle.
7200.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
You can text to that number too.
And always look on.
But first you have to whistle. Here we go.
Always look on the light.
Accompaniment provided by Marcia Lyle.
If life seems jolly rotten.
All right, Kevin, you go first.
All right, I too have two, John.
All right.
Sox Fest is this weekend, so I'm looking forward to spending a weekend at the Hilton Chicago there.
He's here for the Sox.
For the White Sox, it is sold out. There's some buzz with the White Sox right now.
Yeah.
And Sunday, it's my grandma's birthday. Happy birthday, Grandma.
Hey, how good are the White Sox going to be next year?
80 wins isn't unreasonable. I'd say 70 to 80 wins.
But I thought they had some mo going, that they were heading in the right direction.
They do. They're just so young right now. A lot of the prospects are going to be coming up this year, and in 2 years, look out.
That's what I said about the Chicago Bulls. Don't you think the same? I think if we all stay in Chicago, we will have a couple pretty good teams down the road here. You with me on that?
I'm with you on that. I think the Sox will probably have success quicker than the Bulls, but both are looking up right now.
Hey, Violetta, what's your bright side?
I'm going to the King of Hearts Gala tonight. It's for the Christ of Kings School. It makes the dream of affordable education on the West Side for students possible.
Marcia, why are you smiling this afternoon?
I'm smiling because I'm here after getting only 4 hours of sleep last night.
Is this a children's problem? Is this
child's play?
Oh, man. Well, I guess 4 hours is better than three. That's your bright side? Hey, Steve, what's some good news in your world?
My son Noah gets home from a month-long cast in Hollywood tonight.
Oh,
and then
wow.
I'm driving him to Ohio tomorrow, so he'll have to talk to me for 5 hours.
My bright side is Brenda and I love the company of Steve Alexander and his wife Diane. We've been meaning to have dinner ever since I came back to GM. We haven't found the time. We're going to find the time this weekend. Always look on the bright side of life. And my other bright side is I've had 4 dance lessons now for that Chicago Celebrity Dancing with the Stars competition, and it's going better than I thought. I really enjoy it. Thanks to my friends at Arthur Murray for that. There's a free one for you, kids. All right, here we go. Let's take some phone calls. Actually, start with a text. Marcia, you go first.
All right, 630. My bright side is Elburn is getting a Taco Bell. And I just had Taco Bell today, so I understand.
Elburn's getting a Taco Bell. That gets to be a bright side. Hey, Andy, you're on GN. What's your bright side?
Hey, King John. In May, I will have my master's degree.
Oh, boy. Attaboy. What are you studying over there?
Clinical psychology.
Good luck to you, Andy. Call back when you get that degree. We've got a whole staff that could use your services.
Will do. Have a good night. When you're feeling in
the dumps. By the way, this edition of Our Bright Side is sponsored by our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. Let's go to Pat. You're on the air, Pat. What's your bright side?
Hi, my bright side is my son Joe is with the Montana Shakespeare in the Parks in Death of a Salesman.
In Montana?
Yes, he's an actor.
Oh, how much fun for him. You going to go out there and see the shows?
Probably not till the summer, but I'm going to make it a point. He was out there last summer. He's been to Boston, so hopefully he's on his way.
Good luck to him, Pat. Thanks for the call. Give the audience. Hey, Dave, you're on WGN. Give me some good news. Why are you smiling, Dave?
Hey, John, today was my last day of work. I'm moving on to semi-retirement.
Oh, wow. I love these kind of calls. Does it feel as good as I hope it feels?
It feels pretty good. It feels really weird, though, let me tell you.
Yeah, I'll bet. Hey, have a great retirement or semi-retirement. Hey, Otis, this is John. You're on the air. What's some good news, Otis?
Well, our first granddaughter, Elena, is 1 week old today.
How about that? What's the name?
Elena.
Oh, yeah, pardon me. You just said that. Elena. Congratulations. Yep. Thanks for the call. All right, Marcia, what do you got?
312 just cashed in 6 lottery tickets for $6,000.
I'll take that. That's pretty good. Give me another one, Marcia.
All right, my bright side is listening to Violetta read the traffic report. That's from 563.
Well, hey, that was my bright side, too.
Hey, Steve, give me some good news. Why are you smiling, Steve?
Hey, Happy New Year. Happy New Year. The bright side, any pizza with onions on it. You got to have the onions.
Very good. Thank you, Steve. The audience a good. Enjoy it. It's your last chance. Let's go to Anna. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Anna?
My bright side is I moved to Henderson, Nevada 6 months ago, and I love it. Everything I thought it would be. But the best thing is, I can still listen to John Williams.
You're
on
listening?
On the internet, or right now I'm on the, what's it called, the TuneIn app on my phone.
You're listening to us. You're an Amazon Echo user. You're listening to us on TuneIn. So you are listening to us in Nevada right now.
I am. I love it.
Thanks for the call. We really appreciate you tuning us in. Remember, if you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Give me another one, Marsh.
From 847, Brightside, my friend traveled to Mexico and donated a kidney to her dad. Surgery was a big success.
Hey, Jim, you're on GN. Why are you smiling today, Jim?
Hey, there, King John.
He's holding so long, and I'm reading the screen. It says, John, my bright side is today I am 19 months tobacco-free. Oh, that's not easy. Congrats, Jim. We'll go from you. Who's next here? Is this, it says Carvin, but maybe it's Marvin. Hi, what's your name? Marvin. Karen. Oh, is it Karen? Karen, this is John. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi, what's your bright side?
My bright side is that I got tickets for Elton John and Billy Joel yesterday on pre-sale.
Wow. Are they the touring together, are they?
No. It's two separate shows.
That's what I thought.
I was lucky enough to get both tickets for both shows.
So where are you seeing Elton John? He's not coming to Chicago, right?
Yeah. He's going to be at the United Center in October.
Ah, and then Billy Joel is at Wrigley Field. In fact, we've been giving away tickets to that.
Yeah. I got tickets for both of them. I'm so excited.
Yeah, no kidding. Have fun.
Thank you.
If you had to go to one, who would you go to? Billy Joel or Elton John?
Elton. Only because he has a song I like, Layla.
Kevin, Billy Joel, Elton John, you got to pick one. It's kind of the same thing, but you got to pick one.
Elton John?
Yeah, I think I probably go there. Sorry, Billy, we love you too.
I'm Billy.
Cochran was extolling his love of Billy Joel this morning. He was clicking off some of his favorite songs. I think Rosalinda Eyes is the one for me, if I had to have one Billy Joel song. You got a favorite Billy Joel song? What's your favorite Elton John song?
Layla.
Yeah, Layla. Right? That works.
Layla.
Name another Elton John song.
Rocket Man?
Don't help her. I'm not talking to you. All right, let's go to Jeff. You're on WGN. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling. You're on the air. What's your bright side, Jeff?
Hey, King John.
Hey.
My bright side is that my ex-wife agreed to have dinner with me tonight. I'm really excited about it.
Well, I hope this is a new chapter for the two of you, Jeff.
Amen.
Who's next here? What have you got there, Marcia?
From 630, my mom, Marie, is breathing on her own now after several days on a ventilator.
Wow. We live in amazing times,
right.
I'll tell you. On line four, this is Dave. You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Dave? You're on the air.
I've survived a stroke in ICU for 2 years now, so every day's a gift.
You sound great, my friend.
Yes, and I enjoy your radio show every day.
Thank you, Dave. Always look on the right. All right, let's get one or two more in. We'll go, I think, to line one now, and that looks like Joe. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. What's up?
Yeah, I missed the giant accident on the tri-state this morning by about 10 minutes.
Oh, no kidding. I thought about that. I heard about that and thought, if I had played basketball this morning, I might have been there. I got to tell you, I'm glad you weren't there. But, boy, that was a tough one.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you, King John.
Glass is half full. One more, Marcia. Why don't you read one?
Oh, well, you know, vacations always sound good. 630, just booked my first real vacation about a year and a half, and we'll be splitting a week between Austin and San Antonio over my 35th birthday. So,
by the way, Mary Ellen, you're on WGN. What's your bright side, Mary Ellen?
Hi, I'm calling from Kalamazoo, Michigan, and I found my husband's executive coffee room key and his glucose sensor that would have cost us $1,300 out of pocket.
That would make me happy, too. We do this on Fridays. We ask you to call in, tell us some good news while you're smiling, and we will smile with you. Marshall Isle,
okay,
thanks
so
for coming down.
I was so wrong about Elton John.
Okay. Oh,
yeah, I was wrong.
Okay.
He didn't do Layla.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a version of Layla I haven't heard.
Same. I was so
I didn't want to correct you guys.
Maybe he could have done a remix. I was suggesting maybe a remix from him.
I'm like, oh, wow. I know.
You had Eric Clapton.
It was Eric Clapton. I'm going to chime in right here, even though I didn't hear the conversation.
I know Layla, and I thought, okay, I don't know the Elton John version of that.
Hey, I tried.
I guess I don't go that deep in my Elton John love.
I tried.
I think Elton John did The Circle of Life for Lionel.
Oh, yeah, that's a jam right
so
there.
So which is your favorite version of Layla? The Elton John one?
I say do the remix.
Just going to start throwing that out there. Do you like the Beatles version of Layla better or the Eric Clapton version? Just to confuse people.
And I can't brag because I was not sure enough that Elton didn't cover it that I thought, well, I guess right. I could be wrong.
This is rolling with it.
Thank you, Marcia. Go away now.
Metallica has a great Layla version.
We're done now. Ladies and gentlemen, Ro Khan and Anna DeVlantis. Who looks tan-rested and ready?
Doesn't he? I mean, this is a whole new Ro Khan.
This has been good for you. You should do one show every 15 days.
Well, can we work that out this for all of us?
I have been a little bit, you know, we were gone for the holidays, right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, we have to say Christmas. We were gone for Christmas. And then now we're, you know, we're back. And then I left now for the last week. And I did something I've always wanted to do. I went to the middle of summer in the middle of winter. I went to exactly, well, almost as far south as we are north.
Where did you go?
Argentina.
Yeah,
to
yeah,
Buenos
yeah.
Aires. And and then up to the jungles in Brazil. And it was, I know, that's not a sentence that's ever come out of my mouth, nor should have. But I did. And it was it's wild to be in a 15-hour day.
How much beef did you consume down there?
There's a lot of beef.
Oh, I'll bet that's good, too.
I'm not going to lie to you. It's good. They're into it down there. I got to be honest with you, though. Ours is better.
Oh.
Ours is better. They.
I love it. He's on this exotic trip. And the first thing Kevin says is...
Food-related questions.
How was the beef?
Well, the funny thing is I encountered the and I sent this to everybody on the show... I encountered the exact species of monkey that John Fox used to have.
Which no one's seen before. And then suddenly, the same one.
The same exact monkey that Gidget was, you know, because we saw the pictures of Gidget and the whole thing, like from when John Fox had the monkey.
That
and
monkey looked a lot happier.
I went to the Iguazu Falls, which is the largest complex of waterfalls in the world, on the Argentinian-Brazilian border, and that's the indigenous monkey there. And this is the best part of this story. That monkey is, they tell you you have to lock your doors and your sliding door on your balcony of the hotel because they know how to get in.
Really?
And they go immediately to...
The mini bar.
And they open up the mini bar and they leave all the bottles of liquor over to the side. Yes. They open the Pepsi cans. They know how to do that. They love Pepsi's their favorite thing.
Oh,
they rip the paper or the plastic off of the candy bars. They eat all of that. They know how to get into the Pringles. They got the whole thing.
And they don't pick up the room charge for that either.
No.
I bet they don't.
No, you get an extra charge. If they find out that you left your door unlocked and this happened, you get it's like a $150 upcharge, which is 50 million Argentinian pesos.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
Gee.
Did you see John Fox wandering around looking for his...
Did you bring one home for him?
Gadget! They do explain to you, do not engage the monkeys. People do.
That just seems common sense.
People are trying to.
That's a rule. I shouldn't tell you that.
Right. Mm-hmm. But they get aggressive if you have something they want and you don't give it to them.
Mm.
I swear I tied him to this tree over here.
Gadget! That's a good jungle for him to go in there and look because everything in there. I got to be honest with you, I would not be able to tell one monkey from the other. I took a picture of like six different monkeys and I'm like, I can't remember which one that was.
We miss not only you, Ro, we miss John Fox. It's good to have both of you back.
Thank you. I'm leaving forever. Have a good weekend, John.
Good to see you, my friend.
And good to see you.